Balava giri bada dadi. Jai Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Gopi Jana Balava Girivada Dari Yashoda Nanana Braja Jana Ranjana Yashoda nanana braja jana ranjana Jamuna tira banda chari Jamuna tira banda chari Jai Ratta Madhava Kunja Bihari Gopi Jana Balava Girivada Dari Yashoda Nanana Braja Jana Ranjana Yashoda Nanana Bacha Jana Ranjana Jamuna Tira Banna Chari Jamuna Tira Banna Chari Jai Radhe Sham Radhe Sham Radhe Sham Jaya Radhe Sham Jaya Krishna Balaram Krishna Balaram Krishna Balaram Jaya Krishna Balaram Jaya Gaura Nitai, Jaya Gaura Nitai, Jaya Gaura Nitai, Gaura Nitai, Prabhupada, 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 Jaya Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. This is, they didn't leave a note in here. It's chapter what? 24, 22. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. We're reading in the Bhagavatam all about the marriage of Kardama Muni and Devahuti. And now we're on text 34. Nishnatam yogamayasu munim svayambhuvam manum yada brahmshayitum bhoga nakshiku bhagavat param nishnatam yogamayasu munim svayambhuvam manum yada brahmashayitum bhoga nashiku bhagavat param. Please chant. Nishnatam, absorbed, yogamayasu, in temporary enjoyment, munim, who was equal to a saint, svayambhuvam, svayambhuva, manum, manu, yat, from which, abrahmashayitum, to cause to deviate, bhogaha, material enjoyments, na, not, sheku, were able, bhagavat param, who was a great devotee of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Translation purport by Srila Prabhupada. Thus, Svayambhuva Manu was a saintly king. Although absorbed in material happiness, he was not dragged to the lowest grade of life, for he always enjoyed his material happiness in a Krishna-conscious atmosphere. The kingly happiness of material enjoyment generally drags one to the lowest grade of life, namely degradation to animal life, because of unrestricted sense enjoyment. But Svayambhuva Manu was considered as good as a saintly sage because the atmosphere created in his kingdom and home was completely Krishna conscious. The case is similar with the conditioned souls in general. They have come into this material life for sense gratification, but if they are able to create a Krishna conscious atmosphere, as depicted here, or as prescribed in revealed scriptures, by temple worship and by household deity worship, then in spite of their material enjoyment, they can make advancement in pure Krishna consciousness without a doubt. At the present moment, modern civilization is too much attached to the material way of life or sense gratification. Therefore, the Krishna consciousness movement can give the people in general the best opportunity to utilize their human life in the midst of material enjoyment. Krishna consciousness does not stop them in their propensity for material enjoyment, but simply regulates their habits in the life of sense enjoyment. In spite of their enjoying the material advantages, they can be liberated in this very life by practicing Krishna consciousness, by the simple method of chanting the holy names of the Lord, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare. Namo Vishnu, Vala Krishna, Stab, Vitae, Shmati Bhakti, Vinata, Swami, Tina, Namaste, Sarasvati, Devi, Vala, Chai, Shri, 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 Guru, Shri, Papa, Guru, Assembled Devotees. So this is kind of good news. This sounds like you can have your cake and eat it too. You can have your Krishna consciousness and your material sense enjoyment. So it's a pretty good deal. Here we have Swayambhuva Manu living in palaces and enjoying kingly life, but at the same time, very spiritually advanced because of creating this wonderful atmosphere. But if you look at the fine print, it says that there are restrictions and there's regulations. So it's not just a whip-de-doo, you know, let's enjoy. But it's actually very much based on knowledge, especially Vedic knowledge, on how to act in our real position, which is submitted to the Supreme Lord and his desires. So this is, of course, what we've received from Srila Prabhupada in the very beginning. He asked us to dovetail our propensity to enjoy and our desires for a certain enjoyment with Krishna consciousness by doing what we like to do, but doing it for Krishna. And that's to our advantage, that's for sure, because we are conditioned souls and we're full of all kinds of desires. And we're definitely still on the bodily sensual platform. So we found ourselves being able to do so many nice things that we like to do, but we learn how to do them for Krishna. And the overall idea is that by satisfying Krishna, by doing these different things for Krishna, our taste for the material enjoyment, for our own particular enjoyment, fades, it goes away. So it actually swings us over to the side of, what does Krishna want? What does the guru want us? Of course, the guru is giving us information of what Krishna wants as we surrender more and more to him. So it's a very nice process of gradually advancing to receive some reciprocation through our bhakti, not just doing it because we want to keep one for us and give one for Krishna. Maybe keep two for us, give one for Krishna, but we actually gradually learn how to give everything to Krishna. And this will elevate us to that state of here where they call it liberation. But it's much more than that. It's actually developing that relationship with Krishna to the highest understanding, which Lord Chaitanya has allowed us to do. So this is a very important thing. Of course, Prabhupada, yesterday we heard in detail a lot about what it's saying here, that to get to the advanced point that in this material world is recommended for deity worship. It's very essential so that we can become focused that Krishna is the center of our lives. So we heard a lot about that, so I won't go into that so much, except that I found that deity worship was very potent in changing our very bad consciousness that we have in the material world of being impersonal. Particularly myself, I came to the movement thinking that I was God and, you know, that we're all one, and there was no figurehead of God, but then we hear of the Godhead and we think, who's this Godhead? And then Srila Prabhupada very early on gave us deities to worship. And I know that I was very easily able to change my consciousness from being an impersonalist to a personalist just by asking to, can you make a garland for Krishna? Can you do this for Krishna? Can you do that for Krishna? And all of a sudden you find yourself realizing that God is a person and that my senses are very much happy to do things for him. And so this process of deity worship, of course, it's very essential for the householder because they have a tendency to get in some bad habits and to not be regulated. But this requires cleanliness. It requires regulation and some restrictions. And it's very essential after being out working in the material world to come home to a nice spiritual atmosphere and be able to do some personal worship for the Lord. So it's really a wonderful thing. And I remember that when I first came to the temple, I didn't really even see the deities. Even though I came into a very big temple after being in a small temple where they didn't really have very many deities, but when I came into Los Angeles temple, it was like I didn't even see the deities. There was so much going on that I was so contaminated that it took me days to, oh, there's Radha and Krishna. Of course, they didn't have the big ones then, but can just see that it's so contaminated that it's very difficult to understand how Krishna can be right in front of our face and we can miss him because of our contamination. So the deity worship at the home can be at different levels. I remember going to a home for our Krishna Smriti with the girls. It's right on, you know, where they have the, in Tampa, that Bayfront road where they do the Ratha Yatra. It's right on the Bayfront. And there's all these fancy homes. Well, we met one person that let us stay in one of those fancy homes for 10 days using their facility. And we walk in the door and, you know, it shows us a billiard room. It's as big as a temple room. And there's this room and that room. And so where's the temple room? It's here. And you go under where there's a staircase going up and there's like a little cubby hole. He opens the door. See, that's our deities. Shuts the door. I go, you know. So there's different levels. And then we used to have a program here a long time ago where Bhadra arranged so that we would take the oxen and we'd go on padyatra to different homes and we would see their deities. And then the auction didn't work for a while, so we would just walk with a cart and go see the deities' homes, and everyone would do a play in front of the deities, and we'd have prasadam, and it was really a nice program. And you could see the level of the worship around here. If you go to some of these homes, it's like, way up there, you know? When the people come and they get an apartment or a home, they go, well, which room is the deity room? You know, we can move this wall, we can do that. So it's really a wonderful opportunity to fix our and focus our mind on Krishna by this deity worship. But unfortunately, Maya is on duty 24 hours a day, trying to, as it's described here, to drag us and bind us in our own little world of sense gratification. The material energy is very expert at this, especially now with the media, which is at our fingertips, literally. It's expert in immersing us into this idea that I am the enjoyer and that I need all these things for my sense enjoyment. So it's a constant battle, even for devotees, to get out of this grip of Maya. But it's so heavy that it destroys the quality of human beings and of nations. So we have to realize that these qualities of compassion and truthfulness, they can be diminished by this attitude. And this is what's discussing here, that Swayambhuva Manu is in a kingly position. And the attitude usually is that, you know, I deserve the best and it's all about me and my sense enjoyment. So it's here we see that Swayambhuvamana was not caught up by that because he created a spiritual atmosphere. Previous classes were discussing how it's actually an art of the spiritual world to waken your spiritual master at dawn with song and music. And we just, it was described how in his kingdom that actually musicians would come and wake up the Lord and like that. So it was definitely a spiritual atmosphere. And he benefited by that. I know that when Prabhupada first came and was preaching and they got the Second Avenue, that the devotees thought, boy, this is pretty transcendental knowledge. This is pretty mystical. So maybe we should go out and decorate this place so it's kind of spiritual. And so they went out and got some Indian rugs and they got some Brijabasi posters and they got some incense and they got something for Prabhupada to sit on. And they put some curtains, and Prabhupada was very pleased because he could see that, yes, they're trying to make this a sanctified area. And of course, we have grown from that idea of just a simple thing to a very, very opulent atmosphere. When I first came to the Boulder Temple, Bhavananda had just been there, and he was a pretty lavish person, and so every room was a different color, and every madras as a doorway was a different color, and so that was kind of a hippie type thing. But then later on, like when I said went to L.A., it was like, whoa, very royal. But the atmosphere was just envelops you, you know, and people come here, and they come in the temple room, they go, oh, this is so lovely, it's so pretty, you know, it's so nice. So this is an important thing, that it helps to transcend ourselves to a point of being able to hear and receive spiritual knowledge. So this is something that we practice in different degrees. But Swayambhuvamanu, he was an exceptional king. He was called pretty much a Rajarshi because he was representing the Supreme Lord, and he had godlike qualities. And this is, of course, what the kingly position in those days was like. And he was to make sure that the citizens were comfortable materially and spiritually, which is an opulence that most of us have never experienced, or most nations have never experienced. So this is a mission of the real leader, is to somehow or other advance everyone spiritually. And this is very important. We can see here that, like, our Prabhupada made this Mangal Arti as a very important part of our morning program. The whole morning program was to help us advance spiritually, to give us material, nice place to live, nice food, and also a spiritual atmosphere to capture us. And I'm sure that the Swayambhuvamanu had, in his palace, I'm sure he had a temple room and did, you know, puja, personal puja. So this was a great example for future leaders. But unfortunately, a lot of the leaders would naturally tend to, as in this purport, become mesmerized by the opulence and therefore begin to become degraded. It's described that there's the same name, fame, glory, the same old story. That what happens is that the opulence begins to make you become powerful. And it's said that power corrupts. And so from that power, one becomes proud. And then it's always said that from pride, pride comes the fall. First comes pride and then the fall. So we can see that the degradation that we've now see from those times is rapidly increasing because they are not, they don't have that spiritual atmosphere. And the citizens suffer. The citizens suffer when the leaders are not fixed in spiritual knowledge. They become bewildered. They come, you know, what do I do? What do I not do? I'm seeing different standards. They're saying this and they're not doing this. The leaders aren't doing this. They're not acharya. They're not listening to their leaders, to their acharyas or gurus. So it can be a very fearful time too, because very unstable, not knowing what to do and what not to do. So over time, we see that it's the citizens are feeling not protected, sometimes materially not protected, but definitely spiritually not protected. So this degradation has made the kingly position pretty much obsolete. But there are still some kings. I went to Thailand, one of my visits to Thailand, I think it was in 2000, and I was very impressed because I think of 8 months before, or maybe it was a whole year before, the king had died. And this king was so loved by their citizens. His name was Ram the Ninth, and he was a very important king. He reigned for, I think, 70, I don't know, long, long time, 70 years or something like that. But he would go out into the country, to the rural people, increase them to do their agriculture, and he was just a really wonderful king. You can speak to, there's a nice Thai woman here. She has a picture of him. Speaks so kindly, so fondly of him, because he was so personal, and he was a great, very strong in his religion and his Buddhism, and he made a spiritual atmosphere. He was concerned about his citizens, and actually during that time, it was even though it was a year later, there were no festivals allowed. They were still in mourning for this king. To remember what a great king he was. Unfortunately, his son doesn't even live in the country. And anyway, let's not go there. But now there are not really kings. There might be, there's that king, but I don't think there's many more. But there are sultans, there's emperors, there's monarchs. But most of them are just ceremonial. They are not, they share power, or some don't have any power. So it's come down to what we have today. And of course, Prabhupada called it demon crazy. We call it democracy, for what it's worth. But the standards have changed. And at one point, Prabhupada wanted us to help change the standard. So he created the In God We Trust Party. And several of the members of that God Trust Party live in this community now. And they'll tell you that at some point, I mean, they try really hard. I remember trying to get people signing votes for Amarinda when I was in Miami at the farm there. And but it came to where they saw that the corruption was there in that political system. And so Prabhupada had them pull out. And he had some other ideas in mind how we could help in the long run, of course. Prabhupada himself would go out and he would try to influence the leaders wherever he went. He was so pleased when we got leaders to come to him and have darshan. And he would go to the police officers in Detroit or wherever it was, give us this place for kirtan like we're seeing here in the purport. Kirtan is the answer. Just get everyone together, chant the holy name. And he tried to convince Gandhi to do what the Bhagavad Gita says. Don't just preach from it. And he talked to Indira Gandhi, please help our devotees get here so we can do some work for Krishna. So he was very determined. We see other devotees during their lifetime trying very hard to change the consciousness of the government. But there's a very nice success story in the Bhagavatam. The Bhagavatam is definitely the answer. And there's a nice story of one king. His name was Bharat Maharaj. And he was a saintly king on the level with Swayambhu Manu. I don't know what the difference of the years were. Maybe someone else knows how the years apart. But the kings were still very strong. Bharat Maharaj, of course, Bharat Bhumi is named after him, and he was a wonderful king. And he knew to pass on his kingdom to his sons, and so he went off. And then the story goes that he was trying to become renounced. He didn't go like Swayambhu Vimana. He also took the road of saintliness and following the instructions in the Vedic literature. And he took to a renounced life, but he didn't keep in the association devotees, so he fell down attached to the deer and became a deer for a lifetime. And then but he could remember, oh God, I was a king, now I'm a deer, oh my goodness, you know, what a fall down. And so that he got it together, and he, next lifetime after the deer lifetime, he just said, I'm just not going to have anything to do with this material world, which pretty much is impossible for us to do. You know, we can't not. But he did a good job. He played deaf and dumb. And he ended up that he got abused a lot. And then he ended up to be the palanquin carrier for the king, King Ruhuguna. I don't know the difference of time of that between Bart and of that time either, how long it took. But King Ruhuguna had a problem. He had a little bit of the problem that is mentioned here of the pride and bewilderment and loss of Krishna consciousness. But he was raised as in the Vedic culture. And so the king was being carried by Bart Maharaj, and it ends up that he chastises his chariot driver for giving him a bumpy ride. And he could see that he was a low-graded person, didn't talk, you know, dumb and disheveled and everything. And he started to chastise him. You're this, you're that, you're this, you're that. And then Judd Bharat was thinking, this guy, he's off. He's off the track. He's not being a saintly king. I got to do something about it. So he broke his silence. And he preached to the king, Ruhuguna, and he said, all those things you're saying are true. I'm not this. I'm not this. I'm this. I'm that. You're this, this. All these bodily things are true. But you know what? I'm not my body. And he says, you're not either. He says, you're not any better. I was a king too, actually. But guess what? I understand that you are not seeing equal vision. You're not on that level of the spiritual standard that you should be. You're fallen from your kingly position. And he goes on and he tells all about, you know, you're not this body. And King Ruhuguna is sitting on his chariot and kind of wakes up to the call. And he jumps off his chariot, throws himself on the dirt in front of Judd Bharat and pays his respects and regrets. He seriously regrets of the position that he's fallen from. And he says I'm afraid. He says I'm not afraid of the lightning bolts of Indra. I'm not afraid of the trident of Shiva. I'm not afraid of fire. I'm not afraid of the Yamadutas, anything. But I'm afraid of what I've done in being offensive to you, because being offensive to a great devotee like you is something you should be very aware of and very, very, very scared of. So this is an example of a kingly person who can humble himself, can realize that I have made a mistake and that I'm not where I should be. So this is because he was trained previously. He knew what the absolute truth was. He knew what he should be doing, but he was swept away. He was dragged away, like it says here. And the conditioned soul is just like that. We get dragged away. When I was a teenager, I knew what I shouldn't do. I knew I shouldn't do the A, B, C, D, all the things that I was doing at the age of 13. And I was just lucky I didn't get caught or in trouble. But I knew I shouldn't be doing those things. I was trained properly. But swept away by my peers, oh, you got to be popular, you got to do this, you got to have this, you have to do this. So this is what happens to the conditioned soul, and we should be confront that even as devotees, we can be still swept away by pride. I'm the greatest of the mandanga players, I'm the greatest of the kirtan, pujari, da-da-da-da-da. So this is something we should be aware with. There was something I was going to read here. Okay. So that's a very nice story, of a success story. I wish we could say we could have some success stories now. Although usually it's because the leaders haven't been trained and they are not humble enough to receive instructions, even if we had people instructing just recently. One of the advanced, very spiritual leaders in the world tried to give instructions to our leaders, but was criticized. Not humble, not receiving it, but actually went the opposite and chastised which would be like the Brahminical caste trying to give advice. So it's a very serious situation that we're in, because Christian consciousness is meant to to provide shelter and instructions to people in general. And it's very difficult, especially when we hear predictions like Srila Prabhupada said. Srila Prabhupada predicted 50 years ago that your economy is not going to be like it is now all the time. He says it's going to collapse. And therefore, you have to become leaders, and they're going to come to you for shelter. So we have to take that seriously, that somehow or other, he also said it would be great preaching time, because people will be stressed out and they'll be anxious for some leadership and some, even just for something to eat, they'll be very happy about that. So we have to learn how to engage them according to their nature. That means we have to learn how to become equal-minded, like King Rahugana was not. We have to learn how to accept everybody for what they are, engage them in Krishna consciousness. And so this is something that we need to mature in that department. And of course, we have to make a spiritual atmosphere so that everyone will be attracted to come here. We have to be able to take care of them materially and spiritually. And of course, the kirtan is the saving grace for everyone. It's recommended by the Lord himself right here that this kirtan is the safest place, because it can purify our hearts and put Krishna in the center of our lives. So this is the effects of that the Krishna consciousness movement should have on the world. And so I have some quotes here that have been compiled. I love reading them, and I think they're very apropos for right now, for this time that we're in. And they're all quotes from Srila Prabhupada that have to do with this subject. Here is one that explaining how we have to become ideal. It says, if we are not ideal, we cannot create others as ideal. Prabhupada says, so far as we are concerned, we shall keep ourselves in ideal brahminical position, and if need be, if no kshatriyas or vaishyas are there, we can take up their work as emergency. Our business is to create ideal kshatriyas and vaishyas, but beyond that, our real business is to keep ourselves as ideal brahmins. If we are not ideal, we cannot create others as ideal. Training is required. So he stresses that many times. It says, the man who... No, that's not sure. Okay, here's some other ones. This is about the prediction, some of the predictions that Prabhupada said, and about how we should think big. This is a discussion with Rameshwar, Harisari, and Prabhupada. Prabhupada comments, he says, so this artificial way of banking, that will also be collapsed. Harisari said, this is revolutionary, Rameshwar. It is very hard for the mind to, Prabhupada, no, simply do this, Rameshwar. Such a dramatic transformation of society, Prabhupada, yes. Whatever it may be, we should be satisfied locally by our food, by our cloth, by our milk. That's all. Let the whole world go to hell. We don't care. If you want to save yourself, you do this. Here is an example. If you want artificial life, city life, and hellish life, you do. But we shall live like this. This is ideal life. Harisari. But still, we're going out to attract people to come to our lifestyle. Prabhupada, Hari, sorry. We're still going out to attract people to come and live like us. Prabhupada, yes. Rameshwar, well, even more than that, we know that we have the secret to real life, so it's our duty to actually, just like you say, Prabhupada, that is preaching, that is preaching. We keep the ideal style of life. You learn and do it. That was 50 years ago. Have we done it? Here's some other quotes about how we can have peace. Prabhupada says, as soon as people will be devotee, they will not require unnecessary things. They will be satisfied, simply bare necessities of life. Formerly, this is Prabhupada, formerly all the kings or government were responsible for the progress of the citizens, progress of life. The same principle should be followed. Then they will be happy. When you give them all protection, then they will be happy. Here's another one, a little bit about elections. The government should be very expert to know the aim of life, the common cause, and they should train the people to work for the common cause. Then they will be happy and peaceful. But if people simply elect rascals like Nixon, you can fill in whatever name you like, they will never find a common cause. Any rascal can secure votes by some arrangement, and then he becomes the head of the government. The candidates are bribing, they are cheating, they are making propaganda to win votes. Somehow or other, they get votes and capture the prime posts. This system is bad. Vedic civilization, this is another discussion, Vedic civilization is training. To maintain this body, we require, first of all, the brain. If the brain is not in order, then other parts are also useless. And he goes on to describe how we should do Varnashram. So those are some pretty heavy quotes. Here's one more about how we should think big. This is Rameshwar. Srila Prabhupada, should we be thinking in our minds that one day the Krishna consciousness movement will have to manage the cities and the nations of the world? Prabhupada, oh yes. Rameshwar, so there are so many different departments in managing such a big thing. It requires a lot of. Prabhupada, no. We shall, if people become Krishna conscious, then the so many nonsense departments will be reduced. Hari, sorry. Simplified. Prabhupada, yes. The department, the civil departments like illicit sex, meat eating, this will be closed, and that will make simple. And then he discusses how to do that in a certain, technique. And he says, you create some comfort and you create some great danger also side by side. So he encouraged more of a simple life, more dependency on, less dependent on technology. And of course, this was 50 years ago, and we should take up his mission and try to become qualified leaders ourselves, realize that Prabhupada wanted us to think big, and that if 1,000 people were to come here today taking shelter, are we organized? Can we manage it? Can we handle it? If not, maybe we should come together and figure out how to do that, to please Prabhupada and to carry on this movement in a big style. So anyone have some comments, questions? If not, we can go about our service to Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.